Welcome to the original Italian-American podcast, Keeping It Real with Frankie D and the home of the Italian-American moment at ItalianAmericanLife.com. My guest today is Mariana Gatto, the executive director and co-founder of the Italian-American Museum of Los Angeles. I am LA. I love that. That sounds so cool. And the author of a new, beautiful, informative, and treasure of a book called The Italian Americans of Los Angeles, A History. Mariana, I would like to welcome you to the show. Thank you for giving us some of your time today because you are a very busy and productive lady.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
Well, I enjoy talking to you. The last time we talked a lot about your museum, which is also equally a treasure. And before we get into the book, I know I saw that you have a new exhibit and I would love for you to tell us about it.
Absolutely. So this past weekend, the IMLA inaugurated its newest original temporary exhibition, and it's called Creative Minds, Italian American Inventors and Innovators. And it examines approximately 100 Italian American and some Italian as well, individuals who have impacted our life in ways we often don't imagine, you know. So everything from Enrico Fermi and his work on the nuclear reactor to an Italian immigrant by the name of Antonio Passin, who created the iconic red wagon that we call the radio flyer.
Did you say that one for me? Because you know he's
no, I didn't.
He's a Chicagoan. And Antonio Passin came from Italy to Chicago. He did all that here, the little red wagon that every kid in America had. And he really, let me just throw my 30 seconds in of what I know.
Please.
The World's Fair, 1933. He started the company in 1917. 1933, we have a World's Fair here in Chicago. That one was called the Century of Progress. And known for the famous flight of Balbo, but also, from what I understand, Antonio Passin took a real chance and he spent all this money on constructing this giant little red wagon that he had at the fair, and he sold little ones for like a quarter. And if it didn't go well, it could have bankrupted him. Instead, it was the opposite effect, and he did outstanding, and the rest is history. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you said that, I got excited.
No, that's great. He just came to mind because people have asked me, what are your favorite items in the exhibition? And the radio flyer is one of them. Because it's just this iconic piece of Americana, and there's an Italian American behind it. I have some other favorite pieces in the exhibition. For instance, the doctor who identified HIV as the cause of AIDS and developed some of the first tests to detect the virus is a gentleman by the name of Gallo. And we have a beautiful note that he wrote in the exhibition that basically states, he feels the greatest achievement of his life was, developing the test, identifying this HIV as the virus that causes AIDS and helping, develop early treatments, saving many lives. And so it's really, there's so many different items, so many different aspects of life. And we really hope that you have the chance to come visit it. It will be up for 10 months.
10 months. Okay. So for 10 months, because I would love to do that. And that's a lot of things I do with like my Italian American moments. I feel that a lot of us Italian Americans, besides Americans, we don't know the majority of, I'm sure, that 100 people that you highlight. There's the obvious ones, but as the generations go down the road, the radio flyer, the little red wagon, telling me people today know that that was an Italian immigrant. I really doubt it.
The list goes on, like Mr. Coffee, the Mr. Coffee machine, Conair, Charles Atlas, Branch Banking, the United States, AP Giannini. I mean, there's so many, we realize that like how much Italian Americans have shaped our nation and by extension, like how the United States is a nation that has been shaped by immigrants. And that's really what we hope people walk away with, a little more understanding, a little more appreciation.
Well, that sounds great. And I'll tell you the truth. I really would love to come and see it. And I hope to.
Please,
I hope
we are a short flight from Chicago.
Absolutely.
3 hours.
Absolutely. Definitely. Well, thank you. Okay. This beautiful book. And thank you, by the way, for sending it to me. It really is it's like the epitome. It's like a coffee table book because it's just so damn beautiful that, you know what I mean? It's beautiful to look at, but beyond that, it's a wow, treasure of information. Let's go back to the beginning. How did this all start? How did this executive director of a museum get into this book business?
Well, book business might be a little bit of an overstatement because as anybody who publishes, like who does academic publishing realizes it's like, there's absolutely no money in it. And you actually probably invest more than you ever see, but that's not why we do it. We do it to impart knowledge, to document. In this case, Italians began settling in Los Angeles 200 years ago. And they, again, have impacted every aspect of the region's development, who we are today, how we got here. But there was really little scholarship that spoke to this. And, you know, I've been researching Italian Americans in Los Angeles and elsewhere, but primarily in Los Angeles for a couple decades now. And after I wrote my first book more than a decade ago, I knew that there would be a second and I wanted it to be much more in depth. You know, you spoke about like, you know, it kind of looks like a coffee table book, but it's loaded with information. That was my intent. You know, I'm a public historian, meaning I create history for the public to engage with. And our public at the museum is really diverse. You know, very small percentage of our visitors are of Italian extraction. And so I have to create everything to be interesting, meaningful, relevant to a very broad group of people. So I wanted this book to also be like, you know, a serious academic work, but also something that people weren't afraid to pick up. Like they don't feel like, oh, I need to have a PhD in order to, you know, I wanted it to be bright and engaging and images and color. So, so that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, you nailed it. That's my opinion. You nailed it because that's exactly it. It's extremely, it's just so full of information and history, but yet it does, you know, it's something that, you know, your regular guy, and I always say to be probably the leader of the regular guys. I don't know if that's anything to brag about, but I always base it on myself. I'm just a regular guy. Would I like to read this? Would I understand it? And yes, and yes. So you did a great job.
Thank you.
That's my pleasure. How long did this whole process take from, you know, that idea, that thought to completion?
It's really hard to say because like, you know, again, like I knew when I was writing my first book, I misunderstood the maximum number of words. So it was like, I forget what it was. It was like 50,000 was my maximum. And I had written like 500,000 or something, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, you got to cut a lot. So it's been many years in the making, but really the book as it stands today, the product that you're holding in your hands, came about in the last couple years, like really post like 2022, when I met, the gentleman who, became my publisher at Trinacria Press. And they're based in New York and Sicily. And he appreciated kind of the vision that I had for this book, which was, again, like, you know, whether you're a serious historian who's going to be reading it line for line, or you're somebody who just kind of wants to flip through and gain a little bit of information here and look at the pretty pictures, you know, that it would be, you know, something that both would find useful. And so really from like 2022 onward was when I kind of started creating it as, you know, as you see it today.
Well, that was a pretty quick process, I would say, because it's such an in-depth book that, I mean, I would have thought this was over like the course of 8, 9, 10 years, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of yes and no, because again, like a lot of this knowledge and this research is, you know, 15, 20 years old. And I was just waiting really for the opportunity to tell these stories, stories that I wasn't able to tell before. And so, you know, a lot of it's up here or it's in like previous, you know, things that I've written. But so it's kind of hard to say in some ways.
Did you, I don't know, are there some possibly older people in LA, Italian Americans that have been there forever and they had some knowledge that was up in the brain that you could extract from?
Absolutely. I mean, I as part of this book, so having worked in the community for the past 20 years now, I've met so many incredible souls. Some of them are still with us, others have passed on. And I would say, especially, you know, the stories of people who have passed on, it has been such a gift to work with many of them and know them. And I'm not sure if all of them foresaw, you know, some of what they shared with me being codified in a book. Some of the stories were just incredible. And, you know, again, like I kind of feel like if you don't document a history, it's almost as if it didn't take place. I mean, yes, it was there and I'm sure it lives on in some people's minds, but to make it accessible and compile it together in one, you know, one article, that was really my intent. And, and hopefully also kind of contribute to a more complex understanding of Los Angeles. You know, people say that Los Angeles is the most photographed city in the world, but people are ignorant of, you know, how it came to be, including many Angelenos. The only time we really learn local history here is oftentimes in the third and fourth grade, and it's very limited. Unless you take a local history class in college, you're, as an Angeleno, you're likely to learn about the history of New York, the history of Chicago, other places. But you ask the common person, and again, even some Angelenos, how did Los Angeles begin? Many people will say Hollywood, but it actually dates back to, you know, the late 1700s, and it started as, you know, a colonial outpost of Spain. And, you know, was later ruled by Mexico. And it was then during that Mexican era that Italians began settling in Los Angeles in the 1820s. And just, you know, my other hope was also to kind of illustrate how diverse the Italian diaspora is. You know, numerically, the majority of Italians settled in New York, Boston, Chicago, places like that. But if you really look at the United States, and anywhere there was a mine, a mill, a need for cheap labor, you find Italian American communities. And, you know, they're in Chicago, they're in Texas, they're in Louisiana, and they're in California, you know, and just to kind of contribute to the awareness that Italian America is this really big tent and we all can find a place under it, regardless of what part of the nation we live in.
Very well said. I like that. Well, speaking of that tent, you originally are not even from LA, correct?
No, I am. I was born and raised, and I actually still live in the neighborhood where I grew up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I thought you were from Colorado originally and then moved.
My family, my Sicilian side came in through New Orleans. And they cut sugar for our season before moving west to Colorado. And that's where my grandmother was born. She was the only child born in the United States. And then that's where my grandmother met my grandfather and my father was born. They came to Los Angeles, to answer your question, in 1948, right after World War II. And they settled in a place called Lincoln Heights.
It was like 40 years before you were born.
Yeah. No.
No, we're going with it. Don't worry. So
I have a 30-year-old son.
So. Oh, you don't. No, you don't.
Yes, love of my life.
Eight. Okay.
Thank you for that.
I misunderstood completely. I, for some reason, and I thought I read it somewhere, I thought that, you know, I was going to say, you have this really love affair for LA, and I didn't think you were actually born there, but now...
Sometimes I think it's, I jump around a lot. I'm in New York, but I have a second home in Colorado where my family is from. And, and it, it's, I think it's only been in recent years that I've started spending a lot more time there. And it's kind of helped me unravel some of the mysteries of our family's early life that, again, you know, as Italian Americans, many of our older family members never talked about these things. So it's also been really enlightening. But, you know, that kind of what you said kind of is a big reason why I did this, because, you know, despite the fact that I was born in Los Angeles and I, you know, this has really been what I've known for most of my life, growing up, it wasn't always clear to me how I fit into the Los Angeles mosaic as an Italian American. And it wasn't always clear to me how I fit into the into Italian America, into the Italian diaspora, as an Italian American from Los Angeles, or as an Italo Angelina, as a, you like that term. Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying I never heard it before until I read it in your book, and I had asked you before we started the interview, how exactly do you say that? Because I never heard the term, and I didn't want to screw it up. I like it.
So I think part of it was just kind of, you know, there was a strong desire to preserve and document this history. But a lot of it, I think on a personal level, was also just kind of figuring out, like, you know, who am I as an Italian from Los Angeles, and what is our story? And you know, in my research, I realized that, you know, my family specifically also kind of fits into this pattern of, you know, Italian settlement in Los Angeles. You know, many, many Italians did not come here directly. They, you know, they were first elsewhere in the nation. And there was actually a large migration of Italians from both New Orleans or Louisiana and Colorado to Los Angeles, and to kind of realize, oh, you know, we were kind of part of this wave. It was definitely one of those, like you say, like an aha moment, like, oh, okay, now I understand. Now I get it.
Well, I mean, it's just so great that you did this, because yes, we have to tell our stories. Our stories are not going to be in history books. You're not going to learn about it in school. And it's either not going to be told, or if it's told by an outsider, I hate to think the way they're going to portray us. So we need to tell that story. So you did an excellent job. And that is something that is there for the future, you know, a generation later, two generations later, three generations later, and they can read this and know the real story. So great job with that. Beautiful cover. How did you come to this family? How did you come to pick that cover for the book? That's a hard decision.
Well, I wanted, you know, I didn't want to focus on like one person. You know, I didn't want the cover of the book to be like the image of one person to kind of somehow represent all the Italian Americans of Los Angeles. And I like this image, and I'll just kind of, well, it doesn't really matter because we're not on video anyway, but the image is of a family, the Gentile family, 1936 in Lincoln Heights, which was one of the largest Italian enclaves in Los Angeles. And I like this photo because it's multi-generational, which is so kind of representative of Italian American families often, you know, especially during that era. You had grandparents, you know, three generations often living in the same, under the same roof. And I also like this family, I also like this image because it's women and men and children. And a lot of our group shots are like only men, because it was back then, it was like the sons of Italy. There were no daughters yet. And this to me, it kind of really, I felt, captured, you know, Italian American life in Los Angeles. And it's also an image, you know, of you know, three generations gathered around the dinner table. If you notice in the little girl's hands, she has some like watered down wine. There's lots of, like, if you really study the image, it speaks so much about our culture. And I thought it was beautiful. So I decided upon that one. And then the background is actually a topographic map of Los Angeles, of one of the Italian enclaves. And, you know, much of which has kind of been erased, like many Italian neighborhoods in various parts of the country. And, you know, I wanted the cover also to be kind of multi-layered in its history.
No, you did it very well. Quick question. Did you colorize the picture of the family, or is that how they
present? Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah. No, it's colorized. It's colorized. And I thought, like, you know, I basically took it to a professional studio to scan it at like an ultra, ultra high resolution. And just, I mean, the original photo itself is this big. It's like this little tiny, like maybe 6x4 snapshot. And by scanning it, just all this detail came out. And if you also notice, like, this home is, it's a little bungalow, like a California bungalow, like quintessentially Los Angeles, Southern California. So just like all the detail that came out, you can see what they're eating.
Yes, no, it's very interesting. I love that, because you're right. We're looking at, I think it was 1936.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're looking at what they were eating. What was on their shelves? What did their table look like? No, it's extremely interesting. Yeah. So I went through the book, loved it. A few little tidbits that I found interesting, if it's okay to talk about, I don't want to give the book away.
But, of course, whatever you like.
So the part about Prohibition and the wine bricks, I found that really interesting that they had wine bricks that they would sell to people for them to make wine at home then.
Yes. Like, and what's even more, I think, like, I love is that on the wine bricks, there were instructions about basically how not to make wine. It was like, if you add water, and you will make wine, but you don't want to do that. So don't do that. Here's your wine brick. Make some grape juice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that was really cool. Very interesting character was Father Bucci. I
love Father Bucci.
I mean, definitely a very interesting gentleman. Definitely a good.
And he's a looker too. I mean, he's a good looking guy.
He's a very good looking. Did you say he was a lawyer?
He was a Catholic priest. I don't think he had any.
Right. Yeah. Very good looking Catholic priest. Yes.
Oh, I said he was a looker. I'm sorry. Oh, that's my slang.
For, oh, like, no, a good looking guy. He was absolutely a very good looking gentleman. I love the story of Watts Towers and Simon Rodilla, Salvador Rodilla. I find it incredible. When I do make that trip to LA for my first time, and after I visit your museum, of course, I want to go to Watts Towers, because I just find it fascinating. I did a Italian American moment based on him and the Watts Towers, and just an incredible story. Something that touched deep to our hearts and at home. Andy Boy Rapini. We've been buying Andy Boy Rapini for decades. Never even remotely thought, like, wonder where this comes from or the story of it. And there I saw the picture of our Andy. We love Rapini. And very interesting story. Obviously, a lot of very major success stories based on produce, the produce industry. Just tremendous success stories. Another story I found very interesting was a gentleman, Dominic Gebbia.
Gebbia, yes.
Gebbia. And I don't recall what his profession was, but he obviously was very successful.
He was in the banana industry.
Okay.
He was considered the banana king.
The banana king.
And just a really understated guy. When they didn't allow him into the country club because he was Italian, he ended up coming back a few years later when the country club foreclosed and bought the property in cash and then opened up the country club. It, you know, it was at one time, you know, kind of like the who's who. I mean, I think the yearly, you know, membership fees were more than what the average American made in a year, you know. And he was, you know, he converted the club from, you know, a very exclusive, you know, very exclusive place to one that was more community focused and allowed people in with good character, regardless of how padded their pocketbooks were.
Well, I love a very good sweet revenge story. I love a stick it to him kind of story. When I read that, I just thought, good for him. Good for him. He just laugh on them. No, yeah,
you were saying, like, you know, the Rapini, the Andy boy Rapini. I mean, I just, you know, remember, like, kind of learning, discovering these things for the first time. And, you know, broccoli is an Italian word, but, you know, we've adopted it. Oh, it's broccoli, right? And to imagine a time in America where people weren't familiar with broccoli, you know, when it was considered still like a quote unquote Italian vegetable. And the DiRigo family in California, you know, you were mentioning Andy boy, that's the DiRigo family. They grow and ship the first, you know, commercial crop of broccoli to the East Coast and help popularize this on American plates. So yeah, like one of those, you know, one of the many stories that is just, we never seem to hear about.
No. And I, like I said, it really touched home. One thing with rapini, you either love it or you hate it. There's really no in between.
I love it.
I
love it.
I mean, pasta and rapini. Rapini sandwich. If you got rapini left over and you got a bun, there's a sandwich with sauce.
Oh yeah, I probably have that once a week.
Yes,
I probably, if you open up my veins, I think there's rapini in it.
Yeah, and I mean, shockingly, my daughter loves it. She grew up with it. My father-in-law would grow it in his garden here in Chicago, but obviously he doesn't have a garden 12 months a year because we're in Chicago. So we would buy always to this day Andy Boy rapini. That's why it really caught my eye. But no, the book is just a tremendous vast array of LA Italians, but of every, you know, aspect of, you know, obviously the Hollywood stuff to the produce stuff, to the business people, to the religious aspect, to the neighborhoods, to early immigration, recent immigration. So tremendous, tremendous job on the book. It's really, like I said earlier, it's a treasure. It's a beautiful treasure.
Thank you.
Tell me how people can buy and can purchase this beautiful treasure. Makes a wonderful Christmas gift.
Thank you. Yes. You can get it on any of the big guys, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. Or you can also, if you want, like, a signed copy, message for a friend or, you know, family member, you can also purchase it on my website and request, you know, whatever message you want included. And that is marianagatto.com. So that's Mariana with two N's and Gatto with two T's.
And
the Italian way.
And you should buy two books because then you have double the price, pleasure. So watch two T's, two books. Mariana, thank you for, you know, all you do. You really do for our heritage, our people, because this book is a perfect example, because, you know, if it's not there, we lose. Our future loses. Our future people lose. And we can't let that happen. So I applaud you. I thank you. The work you do at this museum, which, I mean, it's got to be an incredible amount of work, energy, money, time to get an exhibit in place. And you seem to have these exhibits every, I don't know, year and a half. And I know you just had the Louis Prima one, and they're just so, so interesting. And once again, keeping our stories alive. And that the current exhibit really touches my heart, because I'm into that, because we need to educate our people, young and old, why they're proud, what we are, the real versions of it. I am very into that. I get even a little angered at what goes on out there and what the average Joe or Josephine, young or old, thinks what we really are. And it saddens me and it angers me at the same time. So you are doing the work to combat that, to beat that. So thank you.
Well, thank you
so much.
Thank you. And I, you know, I'm very much in agreement with you on that. Like, if we don't preserve this history, it will be lost. And so much of it was already lost because of the time, in my opinion, when Italian Americans came of age in this country, when the emphasis was on assimilation and consensus and just, you know, yeah, because everybody wanted to get into the country club and you couldn't when you had a vowel at the end of your name oftentimes. So we didn't pass a lot of this down. We learned how not to be Italian, how to seem less Italian, at least publicly. And so we, you know, we have a lot of like kind of catch up in many respects. You know, we'd love to welcome you at the museum and all of your, you know, listeners, come find us. If you're interested in learning more about the museum, the IMLA and what we have going on, that website is a little bit easier. It's imla.org.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, we're making strides. We're turning the corner. We're getting back to what we needed to do. And thank you for all that. And it was great to learn about the Banana King. Mr. stuck it to the man. You know,
his descendants still live in Los Angeles. And, you know, so maybe if, you know, if when you come out, I'll, you know, invite them to lunch. And
learn
more about the real Dominic Jebiak.
We'll love it. And the last thought before we close. So a lot of the book is about, you know, long time ago. Are the descendants of these people, are they seeing it? Are they thrilled with it? Are they enjoying it to have their, you know, grandpa, great grandpa, grandma in the book?
I'm seeing that a bit. You know, the book came out in late September and, you know, I'm not Dan Brown. I mean, this isn't the Da Vinci Code. This is a book about Italian Americans in Los Angeles. So it's not like, you know, it's necessarily flying off the shelves. But yes, in short, I would say probably in the last week or two, there's been a handful of people whose like parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, or even like, you know, uncles, aunts are in the book, and they've reached out and said, oh, I learned that, you know, my great uncle is in chapter 10 and how great, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to reading it. So I'm hoping that, you know, more people continue to kind of come out of the woodwork, especially those who, you can imagine, I mean, we're talking people who might've passed away 60 years ago and, you know, their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren don't necessarily even have the same surname. So to track some of these people down, I mean, that would be a whole career in itself. I'm always more appreciative when they find us, you know, when they reach out to me.
Yes, but honestly, you'd be amazed how many families don't know the stories that, yes, I'm sure are in your book, that the great-grandchildren have no idea that, you know, maybe grandpa was, great-grandpa was the Banana King or whatever, Tomato King or any of this stuff. Believe me, super quick story, true story. Our Lady of Mount Carmel here in the Chicagoland area, Melrose Park, Illinois. The lady who started it because she prayed to the Madonna, and the Madonna gave her this miracle. And she said, I will start this feast in your honor. And she did it. And it was the late 1800s. As of last July, which is 4 months ago, I'm at the weekend of the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and they had a dinner on Friday night, and I'm sitting at the table, and there were descendants of the lady who started it at the table next to me. Naturally, I start talking to this woman because I got a big mouth and I'm curious. She just found out that her, I guess it was great grandmother, had started it. And she was a woman like 45, 50 years old. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. These stories not necessarily even stay in the families. So this book, I'm telling you, you're going to have people contact you and say, oh my God, I read about my so-and-so, and they're going to be tickled pink to be in there. So great job.
Well, your lips to God's ears. Thank you. I hope that is the case.
Buy that book, get out there, get it. Like I said, great for the holidays, great for the family, great for the house, a must read. Mariana, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, as always, talking with you.
Thank you. And when you do come out to Los Angeles, we'll have to record another episode of the podcast at the museum. How about that?
That would be awesome. That would be great. Okay. You got it.
Cool. Well, let's figure it out.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.